Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Even prior to the COVID pandemic and a year of online education, there were concerns about achievement in our public schools, but the pandemic pushed low achievement to crisis levels. Nearly every North Carolina school district saw a drop in test scores resulting from last year's experiment with learning from home. And the problem seems worse in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. Our test scores tumbled lower than most. For instance, among economically disadvantaged fifth graders, scores fell by 31 points in science. According to test scores, only 16% of Black and Hispanic third graders can read at grade level. A mere 4.5% of high school students are deemed ready for college or jobs when it comes to math. At the state level, those scores were better, but not by much. Now CMS has set new goals for reading, math, and preparedness for college and career, which call for 50% of Black and Hispanic third graders to have reading scores that put them back on track for academic success. That's up from the 40% level Superintendent Ernest Winston had called for, but down from the 65% figure set in 2018. A lot of numbers. Yes, last year was extraordinary, and educational experts around the country warned us of a lost generation of students, but this seems really bad. And what may be worse, many people believe the expectations for success are set way too low. Are they? Is there a way out, or have our public schools failed us? Joining us to talk about that is Dr. Matt Hayes, Deputy Superintendent of Academics for Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. Welcome to you. Good morning.
Morning, Mike.
Dr. Jeff James is back with us. He's our returning champion today. He's Superintendent of Iredell Statesville Schools. Good morning to you. Welcome back.
Good morning, Mike.
Ann Doss Helms is here. She's our education reporter here at WFAE News, and she's joining us along with Steve Harrison, WFAE's political reporter, because there's politics involved when we talk about education. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning, Mike.
So let's start with you, Ann. Two questions about the test scores that I just mentioned, because there are a lot of numbers, and they're very confusing for a lot of people, and you can't do numbers on the radio. But are these entirely based, these numbers based entirely on test scores from October of this year and measuring the results of last year's online, mostly online schooling? And two, did any districts outperform the statewide average, which is pretty low, too?
Well, there are multiple state averages.
Right.
This is why this gets so messy. And the reference to October is kind of confusing, and you're picking that up from the CMS goals. I think that's just a reference to the 2021 test scores. That's certainly what we've looked at. That's kind of the benchmark. It's just, it's the most current thing we had as of October when they drew those together. So these test scores, I've been covering the beat since 2002, and that is when the No Child Left Behind Act federally went into place and said every state must give tests in certain grade levels and math, reading, and science, and they must report them not only by a district average or a school average, but by racial groups and income groups. And so that provided some really interesting data to try to gauge how students are doing and to some extent how schools are doing. But what you quickly learn is that you have to look at it really, it's really easy to get it wrong, either intentionally or unintentionally. You can cherry pick to make almost any point. So, and one of the tricky things with North Carolina in particular is that they now have two cutoffs. They have a grade level proficiency and they have a college and career ready. So if you want to make yourself look good, you're always going to go with the grade level proficiency because it's a little bit lower bar. And what Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools is using in their goals is the college and career ready mark, which is a higher bar with lower numbers. So for instance, I think when you cited the third grade reading, you may have been citing college and career ready numbers for CMS.
Yes.
Again, this makes things very confusing, but it's why this is so difficult. And that's why when the September numbers came out, Steve and I both immediately thought, okay, there is a big question to be answered here. And that is, can we deduce anything about what happened with the different decisions that all these districts made about in-person learning last year. And we knew it wouldn't be easy. We weren't going to do kind of a quick and dirty, you know, pick one number and say gotcha on anybody or hooray for somebody. That there was, I found it really intimidating because, among other things, the number of days spent in school not only varied by district, but varied by grade level. There were, and I think it was Union County schools maybe, that very aggressively brought their younger kids back, but had such crowded secondary schools that with the distancing requirements, they couldn't bring those kids back. So they had a lot less time. So multiple variables, and kids were going in and out. And remember, these were very difficult decisions to make in real time, no matter how clear-cut some things may look in hindsight. We were getting contradictory, you know, CMS would hold a special meeting, make a decision on the best information they had, and at least twice and maybe three times within 24 to 48 hours, new guidance would come down that caused them to have to go back and try again. So,
and very messy. We will talk about what you and Steve uncovered as you analyzed these numbers and compared them to days spent in the classroom versus days online. But I want to talk to the two superintendents here, Dr. Matt Hayes from CMS and Dr. Jeff James from Iredell-Statesville. When these numbers came out, did they surprise you at all? Matthew Hayes.
So, Mike, I would say, Any time we see a drop in students' achievement is going to surprise us more than we anticipate. Now, I will say now, you know, we have to also keep in context that we had 63,000 students that opted into full remote last year for the period of eight. So for a period of 18 months, we had roughly on average over 50 to 60,000 students that opted in to remote instruction, meaning that the family chose to be in that environment. We saw that in many of our schools that had not achieved to the degree that we would like them to, that maybe had students that definitely we've been monitoring and making sure that they have the supports and needed to be successful in their academics. We noticed that many of those schools also were schools that had a higher population of students, up to 50% of their students in their schools that opted into the remote instruction by choice of the families. In many of our other schools, we saw about a third of the population in each of those schools that opted into remote instruction. What we did in order to make sure that we reduced the amount of screen time the student had was we adjusted some of our lessons that were taught. But I also want to be very clear in making sure that everyone understands that we did not, right before the pandemic, CMS transitioned to a new language arts curriculum, which is the L curriculum. It was in its first year of implementation when COVID hit, with just specific grades that were being impacted. And then when we extended that into the second year, we did not pause in our implementation of the L curriculum because we knew it was right for students. So we continued to embed the L curriculum in our grades K-8 for our students. So we had a lot going on that was happening. We weren't going to pause because and be crippled by a pandemic. We knew that we needed to move forward and we needed to focus on what we knew was right for students because we knew that at some point in time we were going to come out of the pandemic and we had to be ready to do that. And so we set all of our measurements up in which to be able to do that.
Dr. James, in Iredell-Statesville schools, your numbers are slightly better than CMS's, and we'll talk about why that may be as we go through the program. But nonetheless, they were down, and you had more days in the classroom than Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools did because of decisions made by your school board. Nonetheless, once again, same question. Did these numbers surprise you? Do they concern you?
Well, not at all, Mike. We were down 11% out of the 116 school systems. We actually had the least amount of learning loss. We attribute that to the fact we came back as soon as possible. So October 5th, our K-5 students came back to class. And if you'll recall, we were still under the governor's mandate of masking at that time. It was not a local board decision. So we had nowhere near the number of students that CMS had virtual. But I think looking at the data, and if we had to hypothesize scientifically, we would have predicted learning loss across our state. We're happy that we only lost 11%. I was telling earlier that there in the spreadsheet that I've looked at, there are some districts as much as 65 to 70% learning loss. And we already have an impossible job to close the opportunity gaps with our students. And this just exacerbated that. Yeah. So, and hit on this, the high schools, because of the size of classes, we were unable to come back maintain social distancing. So our high schools were on an AB schedule. So a student got, you know, one day of in-person instruction, another day of virtual, and a new term grew out of the pandemic called ghosting. I'm not sure if it was coined by our teachers or an academic individual somewhere else, but our students disappeared. They weren't showing up on Zoom. They weren't participating in class. And we actually had teachers going knocking on doors trying to find our students. And unfortunately, what we found out was the students that were most at risk were the ones that were ghosting us. Of all students, they needed to be present either in class or at least virtually. But I think we've proven during this pandemic that virtual learning is nowhere near as efficient as face-to-face instruction. So I would say it shows the great amount of work that our teachers do in the classrooms every day and our administration and staffs. You cannot replace face-to-face learning with virtual for the masses. There's some research I've read, about 95% of the kids really need a face-to-face environment. There's always going to be a percentage that do well, no matter if they're homeschooled, charter school. They can do it on their own, but that's not the norm. So we need our kids in the classroom face-to-face, and that's what's been very difficult for us.
So, Steve, both you and Ann spent a lot of time analyzing 2 years of North Carolina's end-of-grade test results. In a nutshell, what did you discover?
So, yeah, what we did was we took about a dozen counties or districts in the Charlotte area, including CMS, obviously, and we picked those because politically and the decisions the boards there made were very different. You know, most of the counties in the Charlotte area went back to school or went back to the regular classroom much faster than CMS did. You know, I think there's some political reasons for that. Charlotte-Mecklenburg is a Democratic county. Iredale and these other counties are Republican counties. They've had more of a kind of a get along with the virus attitude. So anyway, there was a real contrast there between the philosophies and the decisions the boards made. And what we found is that when we looked at elementary school students, particularly because there was a wide range of time spent in class there, that in general, the more time you were in class, the better the students did. I mean, if, you know, Iredale, for instance, looking at third grade math, that their students in the proficiency level, the grade level math, dropped by about 4 percentage points from 2019 to 2021. That was a hit. And I'm sure that Iredale was frustrated by that. But at the same time in CMS, they dropped by nearly 30 percentage points. And when you slice the data even more based on race and ethnicity and income and English learning ability, you still see those drops show up. You still see them. And again, partially what Matt Hayes said just now is that, you know, CMS had a lot of people who opted out voluntarily and they were going to be virtual no matter what. I mean, that does play into it. But there were thousands of students who would have gone to the brick and mortar classroom if they could have, but they didn't get that opportunity until late in the school year.
So can we blame this then on online learning, these drops, Ann or Steve? Very quickly.
Well, I think you have to say there's a strong correspondence. You know, blame is
okay.
Everything
so Dr. Hayes, Dr. Hayes, given what we know about the county's COVID numbers at the time the decision was made by the school board to go virtual for a good part of the year, in hindsight, and I only have 20 seconds, was that the right decision?
I believe under the current conditions that the and the population density that we deal with in Mecklenburg County, it was the right decision for the safety of all of our students and our families.
Dr. Matt Hayes is Deputy Superintendent for Academics at CMS. He's here with Dr. Jeff James from Iredell Statesville School, where he's the superintendent, and Doss Helms and Steve Harrison from WFAE. We're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the recently released test scores statewide and at area districts around the Charlotte region, all of which were unfortunately lower than normal, and much of that can be blamed on the online learning that we went through last year because of the pandemic. Iredell Statesville Schools had elementary students back in the classroom 5 days a week starting in October of last year. And the result there, we think we can ascribe to higher test, or that can be ascribed to the higher test scores that they experienced. Steve, Iredell-Statesville also has fewer students than CMS who are considered economically disadvantaged, and they have a higher percentage of white students. From what you've looked to in your research, how does that reality play into these numbers?
So, right. So that's going to, you're going to see, because of those two facts, you will see that skewed a little bit when you look at test scores by, quote, all students, when you lump them all together and compare all Iredell students to all CMS students. But when you break it down and say low-income students in Iredell to low-income students in CMS, African-American students in Iredell to African-American students in CMS, you still see these big gaps. They are still showing up. Now, again, there still are some differences between the two groups, right? The students in low-income students in Iredell County are not exactly the same as low-income students in a big city, but they're pretty close. I mean, it's a good starting point. I think it's fair to look and say, how did they do? And like I said, when you look at it by the demographic subgroups, these big differences in performance show up pretty clearly.
And I think where you really did see that play out was in the real-time decision-making, because remember that you had higher incidences and more serious cases of COVID-19 among African-American and Latino families. And that's 65% of CMS enrollment. It's a much smaller percent of Iredell-Statesville. So the fears there, you know, you can kind of look back in hindsight and say it might have worked better anyway to bring them back. But at the time, and I remember this one meeting where you had an array of doctors and you had Gibby Harris, and a lot of them were saying, you know, there are things in place that should protect kids. I would send my own kids back to school. And the board would say, so are you saying we should send our kids back? That's your decision. And at one point, one of the board members said, you may be okay, and maybe it is okay for part of our county. Can you tell us confidently that in those Black and Hispanic communities, that in every community, including those with the highest rates, it's safe to bring our kids back? And they wouldn't answer that. And they said, we can't answer that.
Dr. Hayes, Jeff James just mentioned that some of his students, particularly in the lower performing, among the lower performing students, they ghosted the system, didn't show up for classes online or otherwise. And we know that in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, at least initially during the online period of education, there were a lot of challenges in terms of getting access to online education, particularly in the lower social economic areas, because they didn't have internet. They didn't have the sufficient internet to get online. Did you also experience at CMS ghosting? Did you lose lots of students? They just disappeared off the face of the earth.
So, thanks, Mike. I would say that we probably saw more of that when we transitioned in the spring of 2020, when basically in basically a 3-week turnaround, we had to pivot completely to virtual learning for the remainder of that school year. We saw that there was a lot of planning that took place, a lot of partnerships that we were able to lean on that allowed us to provide devices for our families and our students, not only just around their computers, but also around Wi-Fi devices for any families that needed those. So we appreciate the work that happened with our community to help us provide those. So what we did see, though, is we did see a drop in students, really no different than what we see every other year. We also know that COVID caused many of our families to make decisions, life decisions for themselves, and transition away from the not only just the county or the city, but from the state. We saw families transitioning to live with other families or send students to other places where the population density may not be as great as it is in Mecklenburg County. So what we did to do, though, is in that making sure that our teachers had at least one weekly contact with all of our students, especially in the early grades. Any student that we saw any type of consistency or inconsistency of attendance, we had what we called a street team. And those street teams were devised of individuals from central office in the schools that went out and knocked on doors to find out and speak to families and find out what resources they need to make sure that they were supported when in that virtual format.
Steve, you brought up politics, and you are our political reporter, and you mentioned that the research here and around the country shows, and just anecdotal evidence shows, that in Republican areas, they took a different attitude toward this virus than Democratic areas. In Charlotte-Mecklenburg is a Democratic region, whereas Iredell-Statesville, Union County, Gaston counties are more Republican-leaning. Hindsight would tell us that those, perhaps they took the right approach in this because they did better academically because they had more days in the classroom. But it's impossible to prove a negative, and we don't know what might have happened if the schools had just stayed open and run as normal. So in that situation, are these comparisons between Republican and Democratic areas even worthwhile?
I think it's fair to look at it. If you go back to July 2020, that school board meeting that Ann talked about when the CMS board was making this decision, you know, that was a really difficult decision for them. There was so much emotion on all sides, whether to reopen or to stay virtual. But I think, you know, as the year went on, and you had school districts start to, first of all, you had private schools that came back in Mecklenburg County immediately, and they were able to run it. Now, again, different populations, so maybe let's discount those. But when you started having the Iredales and the Gastons and the Unions bringing kids back much sooner, and you started looking at how they did in terms of the transmission of the virus, you had Duke University had the early results of a study that was starting to be circulated in October of that year showing minimal transmission in these school districts, you know, assuming you take some mitigation measures and are safely and you know, seriously. The data was really starting to pile up that this could be done sooner. But in the end, for a lot of different reasons, Mecklenburg Elementary students had a brief month in November where they went 2 days a week, didn't really come back until mid-February. So there wasn't a lot of adjustment to the new data coming in real time.
And in these areas where they went back to school, Anne, most of them are in smaller districts than CMS. Most of them are in more rural or less populated areas than the Charlotte-Mecklenburg region. And school board members Carol Sawyer and Margaret Marshall don't think it's fair to compare what has happened with results in testing scores in Charlotte-Mecklenburg to more rural, smaller districts as a result. Are they right?
Well, you're never going to have a perfect apples-to-apples comparison. There are always differences. English language learners is a big factor, and CMS has a high percentage of English language learners. You know, when you can't, whatever reason, if you had a lot of support at home, you were going to do a lot better with remote learning or hybrid learning than if you had parents who were working all day or who don't speak the language or who are not computer savvy. So yes, all of these factors are real. Still in all, test scores are generally what we use. And again, we looked at them carefully. We didn't go in to say CMS stinks. Let's get something on them. We went in to say, what's the answer to this question? It's not a perfect answer, but I think it's a meaningful answer.
So, Dr. Hayes, last year CMS relied more on online learning than some other districts around the area. And last year, CMS had 29.5% of third graders who were deemed through testing to be college or career ready among Black and Hispanic students. That number was 16%, lower than the 17.9% state average. Again, a lot of numbers, but what were those numbers prior to the pandemic? How do they compare to what you discovered with these test results?
Well, we know, you know, Mike, you bring up a great statement there. I mean, we know that in-person instruction, and we definitely know that after COVID now, that in-person instruction benefits those students that are of greater need. There's no question about that at all. And we also know that, you know, moving into this year, that's what we were going to focus on. And as, you know, we can... Hindsight's 2020, looking back at those things and making those decisions. But, you know, right now, our goal is to move forward. I mean, we've sent out a plan which we're specifically focusing on. What are we doing to support students with unfinished instruction? We say unfinished instruction because we believe that there's instruction that students didn't gain over last year. We don't use the words of learning loss because that represents that you gained something and then lost it. Right now, what we're focused on is assessing what students know and are able to do. We are planning and addressing the students' learning needs, and then we're monitoring student progress, and we're scaffolding in and through targeted interventions and closing the gaps for students that have existed because of being in this pandemic and the impacts of it.
How did your third graders fare, Dr. James, in Iredell, Statesville, and your Hispanic and Black third graders in comparison to the statewide average and in comparison to what was going on prior to the pandemic?
Well, the data that we shared earlier on with the group, we actually outperformed the state in most all of our K-5 classrooms.
How do you explain that?
They were back into a seed on October 5th. And again, I think once the white papers come in, the research is done, I think nationwide we're going to show that face-to-face learning, high-quality teacher, high-quality individuals in our buildings are worth their weight in gold when it comes to teaching our students. And the same thing with Matthew and Charlotte Meck. The community we had the most trouble with, and Ann's hit on this, there were higher cases of the COVID-19, whether it be the variants or just COVID-19 when it originally hit, in the Latino community. And we struggled getting our LEP teams together to go out into the communities and convince those parents to come back to school because of those numbers. So we saw the similar data that Charlotte Meck did when it came to our Latinos. African-Americans, we were fairly successful in getting those back into the building. One of the things, Mike, that we done was partner with some community outreach groups. United Way actually put in several hundred thousand dollars to make sure we had hot spots for students. There was money available for daycare, because thinking about the impact on parents, both parents working, and when COVID hit and we had to go virtual, someone needed to be at home with young children. So we tried our best to work with the community and establish sites that had protocols in place to prevent the spread, of course. But we think because we put our kids back in a seat on October 5th, the value of that face-to-face instruction is what made the difference in our test scores versus the other 115 school systems in the state.
Steve, did you want to say something there?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, one thing that Ann and I noticed in looking at the data is that the biggest drops in test scores that you would see on all districts, no matter if they were in person or virtual, math was the biggest problem. And it was especially a huge problem in the districts that were virtual, because the reading scores and CMS reading third graders had really big drops. But the fourth and fifth graders, their drops in reading were kind of, they dropped, but they were not particularly devastating. And I think one thing that's been seen nationally is that no one, you know, quote, maths at home. I mean, it's just people don't practice math at home. They still read on their own. Reading was something that seemed to be a little more resilient in terms of virtual learning. But with math and science, kind of the bottom fell out, because their parents, there's probably some parents who can't help their kids, or the kids don't want to do it. It's just, that seemed to be a really big connection between being in the seat as opposed to being on the screen.
And I know you wanted to talk about these math numbers, that they may not be what they appear to be to lay people as they read the results in the newspaper or as they read the results from your study. Talk about that.
Well, we did not focus on Math 1 particularly for this reason. It is so messy. And Math 1, this is what's used to measure high school proficiency. And it is very similar, at least, to what most of us older folks took as algebra. And just as I took algebra in eighth grade, today many of the best math students take Math 1, even though it's a high school course, they take it in middle school. So this kind of gets to what is the question that you're trying to answer. If you want to know what percentage of students in Mike Collins High School are, in fact, have cleared this bar of passing Math 1, then you bring in the scores from middle school. You know, if Steve passed it in middle school and Jeff passed it in high school, you throw them all in. So the scores were much higher when they did that up through 2018. At that point, I think statewide about 60% of students were hitting the minimum grade level mark, and around 50 were hitting college and career ready. And CMS was doing better than the state averages on same group comparisons. But if the question you're trying to answer is, how is Mike Collins High School doing at teaching Math 1, then you don't really care about those kids who took it in middle school. So you just pull them out of the equation, and you are now working with a smaller pool of students who are less advanced, you know, who come in with fewer skills. So that's starting in 2019, right before the pandemic, that is what the state did. They renormed the tests. So it was a double whammy, and you would have known this was coming. And sure enough, it did. Whoop, everybody went off the cliff. Scores dropped dramatically for everybody. I think at that point, now instead of 60% statewide at grade level proficient, it's 41%. And the college and career ready level, which again is what CMS is using in its goals, went statewide from about 50% to not quite 15% of kids. So yeah. All these changes in the tests made the numbers go off the cliff before the pandemic. So and then the pandemic comes in and, you know, it's even worse.
While you were talking, we have both superintendents nodding their head in agreement with you on what you've been saying. And so we just want to bring that out to people listening on the radio here. Prior to the pandemic, as I understand it from your study, Anne, Dr. Hayes, black third graders at CMS had higher scores than black third graders in the 10 surrounding school districts in Cleveland, Gaston, Iredell, Statesville, Lincoln, Catawba, Union, Cabarrus, Rowan, Stanley, and Anson counties. But you fell precipitously during this pandemic. But these are third graders. From a layman's point of view, a non-educator's perspective, they seem to have plenty of time to catch up. Am I right? And how long do you think it will take for them to catch up?
So, Mike, that's a great question. What I will tell you is that as we've met with our board, we've set some very aggressive goals over the next couple of years. For our students. We believe that with, like I said before, with some of the pieces that we put in around the unfinished instructional support plan that we have for our students, assessing where our students are, making sure that we're scaffolding, closing that unfinished learning gap that students have built up over the period of time that they've been in COVID, we anticipate within the next 2 to 3 years to be able to drastically see an increase in our student achievement, not only just in one subgroup, but in all of our subgroups, and especially our African-American and Hispanic males.
And Dr. James, in 10 seconds or 15 seconds, kids don't like to fail in school. It makes school a miserable experience. So can they intellectually understand that if they are not performing up to where they should have been, that's because of the pandemic and not because of their problems?
Well, absolutely, and probably like Matthew and CMS, we have summer acceleration. We don't call it replacement, but acceleration to try to bring in different ways to close those opportunity gaps. So we've seen great success.
Dr. Jeff James from Iredell Statesville Schools, we're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about declining test scores in light of the pandemic and a year of online education and what's being done about that. And we're also going to talk about the new goals that CMS has set for itself going forward. Dr. Matt Hayes is here from CMS, where he is Deputy Superintendent for Academics. Dr. Jeff James is the Superintendent of Iredell Statesville Schools. Ann Doss Helms is our education reporter at WFAE News. And Steve Harrison is our political reporter. The two of them have put together a study of what happened statewide and district by district in the area during this pandemic. We talked a second ago, Dr. Hayes, about third graders underperforming and declining performance based on what had to happen last year with remote education. They didn't have a lot to build on, and it seems to me, as we just said, that they can catch up. But then we have this situation with high school seniors. They're in their 12th year of education. And at the high school level, if I'm right about this, I think only 4-something percent of CMS high school students scored high enough on exams to be considered to be performing at the college level or at the career level in math. That cannot be purely due to the pandemic. That speaks, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, to a longer lasting, more serious problem. Have these students been struggling all along? Have the public schools been failing them all along?
So thank you, Mike. So first of all, going back to 18-19, the percent that you were just referring to was around 16.4% pass rate on CCR for our students in ninth grade math one. I'd like to go back to sort of what we were talking about with Ann just a few minutes ago, that CMS prides ourselves and many of our students that are in that, that would be considered in that CCR category in the ninth grade, to taking Math 1, not only in eighth grade, but having the opportunity to take Math 1 in seventh grade. So they actually are taking two high school level courses, Math 1 and Math 2, before they get to our high school ranks. So to answer that question, would say our students that come into ninth grade with Math 1 out of Math 8, eighth grade Math and into Math 1 are students that many of our students are grade level proficient, which means they score level 3. Well, that's not CCR. CCR is a level 4 and level 5. We also know that those students that also are in many of those classes have significant or some gaps that have existed in their math for years. Doesn't mean that they're not grade level proficient, but means that they have not exactly scored career and college ready in a 4 or 5. What we're doing at this point in time is making sure that we're focusing in specifically on our students all the way down to grade 5 to make sure that we're building those math skills and closing those gaps to make sure that when our students get to our Math 1 in ninth grade in the near future, that they're ready to perform well and actually score 4 or 5 on there. So this is not a 1-year fix. This is going back into all the way to fifth grade and making sure that we're closing that unfinished learning.
But what about these young people who are high school seniors or high school juniors? They're out of time.
Some of them, if you're a senior, but we also know that many of our students still have Math 2, 3, and 4 that they take in our high school ranks. And we've made sure that as we've moved into this year, once again, you hear me talk continuously about the unfinished instructional support plan, which is assessing where our students are and what they know and are able to do. We've created plans in each of those courses, which allow us to scaffold the work for those students for any of the material that they were not able to receive. And we're also doing that through targeted interventions and then monitoring our students for that success.
And let me ask a question. Dan, Drew has tweeted this, and I think this needs to go to both of the school superintendents here. How are you providing teachers with the freedom to make instructional decisions and also supporting them to use data to make those decisions instead of just following a scripted curriculum? And what also I'm going to add to that, it seems to me in this post-pandemic period when you're trying to address things that happened during the pandemic, do the teachers have that freedom to make changes in the classroom on the spur of the moment? Dr. James.
Absolutely. And I think Matt's shaking his head also. We have great professional learning communities, and the whole purpose behind that, and actually general statute requires that we have common planning at least once a week from teachers. And that is a group of teachers that get together, analyze the data, determine what's working, what's not, and then proceed with instruction that closes those opportunity gaps. So I think that's, we both probably use data in a similar manner. But absolutely, they have the latitude in their classroom to use interventions that close those opportunity gaps. And one thing Matthew, I'm sure, was going to mention, there is a way to recover a credit that you fail a course, you can do credit recovery. And that's just not a rubber stamp and handing you a grade. So during the summer, we do accelerated learning with small group instruction, and we help those kids that miss some of the tenets. But Mike, the problem goes all the way back to K-5, and I think Matthew would agree with this. When we went from North Carolina Standard Course of Study to Common Core, our K-5 teachers were able to teach the North Carolina Standard Course of Study when it came to math. But when we went to Common Core, the playing field became a lot larger, and you had to know a lot more things about mathematics in order to teach it. So I always hear this from my board and from people in the community. Back in the day, when we learned math, it was formula based. If you look at one of our tests now for mathematics, you know, K-12, it's a reading problem. And if you have reading deficiencies, you're going to fail the math problem, not because you lack math skills, because you don't know how to ascertain what the question is asking. And the vocabulary that we put in our test, and some of them starting in sixth grade, the Lexile levels are about 1,200 or 1,300. You can research that, and that puts that test level up to about a 10th or 11th grade level. And we're asking our students, I think we're stretching them too far. And again, if you go back and compare non-Common Core scores to Common Core scores, you will see a drastic difference in the way our students perform. And in my opinion, it's not very fair to our students. I know North Carolina's changed some things. We call it North Carolina Standards, but As the old adage is, a rose by any other name is still a rose.
Very quickly, Dr. Hayes, would you concur with most of what the Dr. James just said in terms of CMS's situation?
I definitely would, but I'd also like to add that when we look at our curriculum, we look at our curriculum as a floor. What that means is that this is the bare minimum that students are going to get, which we believe is high quality. And then it's the teachers then are able to, based on their skill level, are able to really scaffold up for students that extended learning opportunities that they have. But I also want to state that we also know that one of the key factors moving forward with all of this work is that we build the capacity in central office to be able to support our teachers, support our principals and academics that they need to do. So all of our learning communities that you see, our six learning communities across our district, are provided with an individual that is focused on English and math that's designed specifically to help schools and also our principals and leaderships in those schools to be able to close that gap.
Steve, there are those who have said for years that in North Carolina, the state legislature has chronically underfunded education. This pandemic has seen this decline, which we've been talking about all morning, in performance statewide. Are there any plans? Is there any money in the new recently signed budget that puts more money back into education in any significant way that could help address the declines or raise the overall level of performance?
Well, I know that teachers are getting a 5% raise plus some bonuses over 2 years, which, many educators feel is not enough and is not, doing enough to address the challenges of their profession. The big, of course, decision is this $1.7 billion hanging over the state's head with the Leandro decision that a judge has ordered money to go in. But there has been no real sense from the legislature to do a dramatic amount of more money in response to the pandemic. And, part of that is going to be a little bit of that is going to be, this is a Republican legislature, a Republican state. They're going to look at places like Iredell County and Union County as saying like, well, there were challenges, but they managed to play through. Others didn't. So that, I think that debate will kind of continue to play out as that there would be a feeling that the pandemic was a big difficulty, but it wasn't necessarily the huge drops in test scores weren't necessarily inevitable.
And school systems across the country, across the state rather, have seen a decline in enrollment, and they have not necessarily bounced back to where they were pre-pandemic now that we're in the post-pandemic period. CMS, I think, reported 138,000 plus students in the first month of classes. That's their enrollment. That's 177 fewer than at the same time last year and 7,000 plus below state projections. That figures into what kind of funding you get from the state. How much money might you lose, Dr. Hayes, because of this decline in enrollment?
So thankfully this year the state passed that we would be held harmless for those numbers for this school year. But it's quite a bit, right? So if that, we have to make sure that we are the first option for our students and our families in CMS. But what we also know is, like I said before, we have a lot of individual families that moved out of state for various reasons, safety, jobs, those type of things. So we do expect to see an uptick here over the next couple of years.
I want to talk about the goals that CMS just announced that they are setting. The school board just approved unanimously new goals for reading, math, and preparedness for college and career, which call for 50% of Black and Hispanic third graders to have reading scores that put them on track for academic success. That is below the 65% goal the board set in 2018. The math goal was even lower, to have 25% of all high school students who take Math 1 earn scores that put them on track for future success by 2024. 25%. And last year, I think only 4.5% hit that mark. Why are we lowering the bar? And couldn't it be argued that if only 50% of school students, no matter their color, can read and only 25% can do math at grade level, that the school system is failing them?
So I would say that, you know, we, our board took on this endeavor as far as looking at the board governance piece and setting those goals and reestablishing those from where we were pre-pandemic. One of the things that they focused on was to make sure that we weren't setting the bar low, that we were pushing students to greatness and making sure that they were achieving at high levels. I will tell you that what we're looking at with many of these percentages are the floor. They're not the ceiling. Are we saying that that is our expectation for all of our students? By no means. We expect for our students to do better, and we will continue to do better. We've got a great cadre of teachers and principals that are out there to do the work.
That may be the floor, but it comes across when you read it as the aspiration that you want at least 50% of your students to be proficient. And that sounds criminally low to me.
And there was a lot of discussion among the school board about the fact that this is a huge stretch goal. And it kind of, again, comes down to what's realistic to demand from your staff versus what do you aspire to. Of course, everyone should aspire to every child succeeding. And it feels really awful to set goals lower than that. But on the other hand, if they say you need to gain 30 percentage points a year and they do it, I'm going to be looking for cheating. I mean, there's only so much you can do in 1 year or 2 years. And we've seen that over and over. We've seen that locally with some of these reform efforts. We saw that with No Child Left Behind, where they said, if you just gain this much per year by 2014, all kids are on grade level. How'd that work out for us?
So Dr. James, how do these goals compare with your goals?
Well, again, we set the mark fairly high. And The one things with the current system that we have, Mike, is the A to F grading system is not a really fair grading system for any school system. All it really tells you is where poverty exists. There is 40 years worth of data and a scatter plot that shows you as poverty goes up, proficiency goes down. And I've lobbied with our politicians for many years. Growth is a true measure of the work a teacher does in that classroom. We have, and I'm sure Matthew has the same thing, we're having kids walk in, and even, you know, post-pandemic, worse than before, we're having students walk into kindergarten at 5% proficient. And when that teacher, they leave kindergarten at 25% proficient, like Ann was just saying, that is a huge leap. Being able to continue that year after year is what raises the proficiency goals. We're hitting in K-5 about 50-55% proficiency. We would love to be 65-75%. Let's just be honest. We'd love 100% of our kids to be on grade level.
So Dr. Hayes, are you and Dr. James saying essentially that these goals, as low as they may seem to a layperson not in the classroom, are an accurate and fair reflection of the hand that you have been dealt as educators by societal problems beyond your control?
Yes, but I will also follow that up with simply saying that this is not just a school district initiative that needs to be addressed. This is going to take everyone. And as you heard through some of the conversations that were happening with the board the other night, these are aggressive goals, but they're going to require all stakeholders to lean into this work, which are community, which are our families. Everyone has to get behind moving our students and making sure that we are addressing this unfinished learning that's taking place. So I would say we've got to get to the work.
If past is prologue and it takes a village, do you see that that's going to happen going forward?
You know, I would hope that from all of us going through this as one entity, that we would also come out of it as one entity and refocus what we need to do around instruction and refocus what we need to do around public education, and not only just in Mecklenburg County, but in the state of North Carolina and across the country. I believe we've lost our way at times, and we've now got to reposition ourselves back as a community of stakeholders to change what is experiencing for our students.
Dr. Matt Hayes gets the last word because we're out of time. He is Deputy Superintendent for Academics at Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. Dr. Jeff James joined us, Superintendent of Iredell-Statesville Schools, and Ann Doss Helms and Steve Harrison, our education and political reporters for WFAE. Thank you all for the hour. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.